It's that time of the year. This is the annual KPOO Fall Fundraiser. KPOO needs to raise $75,000 by December 31st. This $75,000 is needed to cover our major annual operating expenses. KPOO is independent and a 100% listener-supported radio station. Please help support the annual KPOO Fall Fundraiser. Please send checks or money order to KPOO, Post Office Box 15-6650, San Francisco 94115. You can also donate with your credit or debit card online at KPOO.com. We need the help of every listener to support KPOO Radio. And remember, all donations are tax deductible. Thank you for your donation and support for another year.
This is KPOO San Francisco, baby, baby!
Shimma, shimma! Shimma, shimma! Shimma, shimma!
Let me in!
Shimma, shimma!
I wanna be closer to you!
Shimma, shimma!
Open up your soul!
Shimma, shimma!
Let me find that part of you! The part that nobody ever knew.
Let me touch your mind.
Oh, why don't you let me in? Let me be the first to ever touch your mind.
Hello and welcome to Let Me Touch Your Mind, the show where I try to get you to be something, do something, experience something, enjoy something. And there are shows that have been around that people have been enjoying for years and years and years. I'm about to talk about one of them. Here to talk about Kung Pao Kosher Comedy is the founder, Lisa Gabaldic. Welcome.
Well, hello, Marilyn, and hello, KPOO audience. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on. So what year is it? What year are we now in Kung Pao Kosher Comedy?
It's the 32nd annual.
Wow.
I started the show in 1993 when I was six. No, seriously, I started at 31 and now I'm 62. So, it's now more than half my life.
That's
crazy. So it started
crazy.
As a one-off, as a joke, and took off.
And when you say it started as one-off as a joke, tell our listening audience about it.
So Kung Pao Kosher Comedy is Jewish comedy on Christmas in a Chinese restaurant. And in October of 1993, I was booked to perform at a women's comedy night in South Hadley, Massachusetts, outside mm-hmm. of Northampton, mm-hmm. at a place called the Peking Garden Club, which I thought was going to be a comedy club. And I got there, and it was a Chinese restaurant. And I called a friend in New York the next day and said, I just had the most ironic experience. I was telling Jewish jokes at a Chinese restaurant. And the joke of an idea of doing Jewish comedy on Christmas in a Chinese restaurant came out of that conversation. And I came back to San Francisco, and I couldn't get it out of my mind. And I booked comedians and found a restaurant and wrote a press release. And hundreds of people showed up and kept showing up, and I kept telling the banquet manager to tell the kitchen to keep cooking, and then I figured out how to do an event, and it kept growing, and now we're 3 days, 2 shows a day, and have wow. had all the comedy greats on the stage.
I love everything about that story. I want to go back to when you show up at this location and you realize it's a restaurant. First of all, who booked it and what was their thinking behind it?
It was a guy named Norm Lefoe, and a comedian from L.A. had come through San Francisco, and we met at a show, and she said, oh, you should contact this guy Norm because he produces a women's comedy night in Massachusetts, mm-hmm. and I was going to be going back east. And it ends up that he just went around town and tried to find a restaurant that had a space, and a lot of Chinese restaurants that have banquet rooms have these round tables of 10 and a stage, so it was a perfect setup. But I had no idea until I pulled up that it was a Chinese restaurant. So that entirely changed the course of my life.
Now, did you have a conversation with him afterwards? Or do you credit him yearly with getting this thing started? Or where did it go after that?
I Don't remember.
Okay.
That was 30 years ago. The only thing in my brain is Kung Pao. I've mentioned in the press release and on the website that the idea came from the Peking Garden Club, but I don't think I've ever credited him, and nor do I know if he's still around or alive, but I will research that and put his name in as a credit for this cockamamie idea.
And what I also love about this story is no one ever knows when they start to do something creative that it's going to take on this life of its own. And I think it's sort of, it's inspirational because there are young'uns out there who want to create something and they see a Kung Pao Kosher comedy as sort of a, I don't know, what do you call it, like a seasonal tradition, and they don't realize that it just started out of a young person's desire to tell a funny joke.
Yeah, I had started doing comedy in 1989 and did this trip in 1993, and you know, and even starting comedy was an accident because I was giving a speech as the best woman at a friend's wedding, and I gave a tongue-in-cheek speech, and all these people came up to me and said, "Where do you perform?" And I didn't, and I just happened to be at El Rio a couple of months later and saw that they had a comedy night and that there was a sign on the bulletin board for stand-up comic wannabes. This guy was doing a class in his house just up the street from El Rio, and I went there on four consecutive Tuesdays, and then we had class at El Rio, and I met Malcolm Thornley, who is now no longer with us, but he had started El Rio, and he said, "If you want to do 5 minutes sometime before the scheduled comedians, give me a call," and I got up the courage to give him a call. But everything in my life has been an accident, Marilyn. Well, so anyone out there thinking about producing an event, go for it. Just go for it. You don't know what's going to come out of it.
So what was that 5 minute set like for you? That the first time, you know, you did it before everyone, and how did the audience respond?
Well, when we did the comedy class at his house in Bernal Heights, I was so bad. I kept hearing myself in the third person and would stop in the middle of a joke and say, "This is no good." But then as soon as we had class at El Rio with a real stage and we went on before the real comedian, so there was a little bit of an audience, it totally gelled all of a sudden having a stage. And, you know, my last name is Godoldig. I can hardly pronounce it. I used to have cue cards that I still have in my filing cabinet, and dig. So I would have the audience do the syllables with me for everyone to be able to pronounce it. And I don't even know what I was talking about at the time. Probably a lot of gay and Jewish stuff and observational humor. And but I just knew as soon as I was on the actual stage that felt good, and I wanted to do that as opposed to being in this guy's living room.
I understand. So I'm guessing that first experience then, the audience gave you positive feedback and like they responded positively.
Absolutely. And you know, as a performer, there's nothing like the response of an audience. And when you do stand up and you have these thoughts in your head and you think, "I think it's funny. I don't know if anyone else is going to." And then you say something and people think it's funny, or it's some observation that others can relate to. You know, when you're a comedian, you're often very much in your head, and then you put it out there and it's like, "Oh, other people think that way. Other people can relate to that."
Okay.
So, yeah, I was hooked. It was just, you know, nothing that I ever imagined doing before that. And then with producing, I never imagined doing it until that happened.
So did your folks get to see you do comedy?
Yes. Kung Pao started in 1993, and my parents came in 1995. And I actually got my mom on stage that year. I used to do what I called Irv calls. My dad's name was Irving, and my mom would put on those big mother glasses and stand at the foot of the stairs and yell for him to come down to dinner by going, Arving, this shriek. So I used to do that in my stage material. And then since my mom was there, I called her on stage to do a duet with me. And she did a duet with me. And then fast forward to the pandemic, I was just living with her in Florida. doing lockdown comedy, monthly comedy show online, and then Kung Pao was only online for 2 years, and my mom was our monthly guest, and she ended up being very funny.
Aww.
So, yeah.
Now you know where you got it. You came by it honestly.
Yeah, came full circle. And she passed away, sadly, in August, so the shows this year are dedicated to her, and we'll show a clip of her, and I think the shows are going to be dedicated to her for the rest of my life, because I think a lot of my humor came from her. I had no idea how funny she was until I just lived with her.
Well, you're lucky that you got to spend, I mean, the pandemic was awful, but you did get to spend it with your mom, so that's a blessing in and of itself.
A complete unexpected silver lining.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know that the pandemic was horrendous, and a million people died in this country and millions worldwide, but there's some silver linings that came out of it. And for me, it was getting to know my mom and her getting to know me.
Excellent.
And putting her on stage and just forming this relationship I would never in a million years have expected.
Hmm. I'm glad of that for you. So this year you're doing it. Where is Kung Pao Kosher Comedy happening this year?
So we're at the Imperial Palace Restaurant in Chinatown. This is our second year at this restaurant. For over 20 years, we were at the New Asia Restaurant, but when the pandemic hit, the restaurant converted into a supermarket, and that building is going to be torn down for low-income housing, and eventually the restaurant will be rebuilt.
Okay.
So the last 2 years, we've been at the Imperial Palace Restaurant on Washington Street in the heart of Chinatown, right by Portsmouth Square Garage.
Oh, okay.
And on Portsmouth Square, rather. And we have our usual format of two shows a day and fabulous lineup of comedians, and the show is in person as well as virtual. So if somebody's listening to this from somewhere else or don't want to get out of bed for whatever reason, you don't want to go to a show, you can also watch virtually.
And who are the comedians that will be gracing the stage this year or gracing the restaurant, the table?
Oh, my God. Okay, so I always book what I think is going to be an amazing lineup, but also people I want to spend 3 days with.
Uh-huh.
So Ophira Eisenberg, who has this podcast, Parenting is a Joke, and she's most well-known from hosting NPR's Ask Me Another, sort of this quiz show.
Okay.
And she's based in New York, originally from Calgary, Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And she did Kung Pao 10 years ago, and then she did one of the virtual years in 2021.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Kirshen, who's originally from England, I've tried to get to do this show for years, but he was always going back to England. But now that he's married to someone here, he's staying.
And I
had him doing the lockdown shows. That was another silver lining where I got some performers who I wasn't able to get before, and then we kind of slid into Kung Pao. And he's been on Jimmy Fallon and Craig Ferguson, all these different shows. And then Becky Bronstein, who's originally from Alaska. So we've got Canada, UK, and Alaska. And
very
she's
cool.
also in LA, and she's been on a bunch of different TV shows and different film festival, comedy festivals around the country. And then me as the MC, mistress of ceremonies.
And so when is it? What's the exact address? And where can people get tickets?
Okay, it's December 24th, 25th, and 26th. We have two shows a day, a 5 p.m. dinner show with a six-course meal and an 8:30 cocktail show with dim sum and pot stickers and egg rolls. And you can get all of the information at koshercomedy.com, kosher with a K and comedy with a C. And tickets can be purchased at cityboxoffice.com/kungpao. And each year, we always have two different organizations that we give partial proceeds to.
Mm-hmm.
This year is the Chinatown YMCA Food Pantry, which we also donated to last year, and Shalom Bayit, which is a local Jewish domestic violence organization that does life-saving work, literally life-saving work.
Very good, very good. So are tickets available for all the shows or some of them? Because I know they sell out
they
early.
They are still available for all the shows, but the dinner shows are going to sell out soon. So, but at this point, they're still available for all shows.
Okay. And if people want to find out more, not only about Kung Pao Kosher Comedy, but more about your upcoming shows, where you do stand-up, how do they do that?
They can go to koshercomedy.com and scroll all the way down to sign up for the mailing list, and then I will send out information about upcoming shows that I'm performing in, producing, and I just do everything else under the sun.
Excellent. Well, Lisa, I'm like I think I've told you this before. I'm always tempted to say your name the Dutch way, and it's really hard for me to not say it that way. So
you can say it any way you want.
So Lisa Geduldig, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today, and thank you for taking that leap 30 years ago and making something that people that just delights people year after year after year.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for continuing to support the Arts by this program.
You are welcome.
Desperately needed.
You are welcome. People of Earth, Kung Pao Kosher Comedy. You can eat, you can laugh, you can have a fabulous time. So go enjoy your life, okay? Go enjoy it.
You're my little churchy face. My coochie, coochie, woochie, little churchy face. Every time I look at you, I sigh.
And you're my little teddy bear. My lovey, lovey, dovey little teddy bear. You're the apple strewed hell over mine eye.
Your choochie woochie nose, your choochie woochie eyes, they set my heart aflutter.
Your oochie coochie face, your oochie coochie gaze, wilts me down like melting's butter.
My little churchy face.
And you're my teddy bear. Together we're a choochy, woochy, woochy, coochy pair.
My happy task, I only live to serve you.
I never will divine what magic made you mine. I only know I don't deserve you.
You are my little choochy face.
And you're my teddy bear. Together we're a choochy, woochy, oochy, coochy.
Choochy,
woochy,
oochy,
coochy. Choochy, woochy, oochy, coochy.
We'll be right back.
Green Day and Espionage. Green Day's, that's from Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me. Before that, Baron and Baroness Bomburst and Chuchi Face. That's from Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. I saw a delightful show on Friday called Peter Pan. And coincidentally, I have the director of it here to talk about it and talk about what Panto is and all kinds of stuff. Here to talk about it, I'd like to welcome Liam Vincent. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm great. I'm glad you saw the show on Friday.
I did. I went to go see because I know Chanel, so I was like, a bunch of us went to see it. And then I was like, I looked at the program and I was like, wait a minute. I know Rotimi. I know Nick. I know Valentine. I was like, I just got really excited. I'm always happy when I see friends on stage.
Yeah, it's a cast of 22 local powerhouse performers.
Yeah, and it was so much fun, and I love the energy of the audience because there's lots of kids, and you know I love candy flying at you. It was a whole lot. But rather than me talking about it, why don't you talk about it? First of all, what is Panto, and how does it differ from pantomime?
So, yeah, Panto is actually, it's a British tradition, mm-hmm. and it is derived from the word pantomime, and I guess the best way to put it is, it's kind of an interactive family musical theater experience. And the Brits have been doing Pantos, they do them around Christmas, they do them every year, mm-hmm. and it's a way for the whole family to come out and have a fun time. The Pantos that we do at the Presidio, because we're not Brits and we don't know the whole tradition of, in Panto, there's a lot of call and response. You mm-hmm. were there on Friday, so you got to be part of the, it's behind you and
yes.
Oh no, you did. Oh yes, you didn't.
Mm-hmm.
A British audience would know all the things that you're supposed to call out. And there are tons of them. When we do them, we pick and choose what we think are the most fun
okay.
for American audiences.
Mm-hmm.
And we add that in with singing and with dancing, and then we grab usually a really fun plot like Sleeping Beauty or Peter Pan and kind of mix that all together. So that's kind of it's kind of an American for San Francisco version of Panto.
And I loved the costumes. I especially loved the narrator's costume, whose dress looks like books. And I was like, I was coveting that dress. I loved it so much. Who did the costumes?
So our costume designer is named Alina, and I apologize in advance that I'm going to butcher her last name,
mm-hmm.
Bokorokovna.
Mm-hmm.
Bokorokovna, and she's incredible. And you mentioned the narrator, who is named Dolores O'Farrell, both San Francisco street names.
Yes.
And she starts off in this kind of like 18th century queen outfit. And then if you noticed in the second act, she ends up in her own pirate outfit. And then at the end, she has that wedding dress. The costumes are incredible. And I think that's part of what the Panto tradition is. It's spectacle and it's fun and mm-hmm. it's musical numbers, but we got really, really lucky that we have just half of those costumes you could put on a runway and people would, they're just incredible.
Yes, yes. And talk about the music and don't leave anything out. Who did the writing?
So the Panto was, great question. Stephanie Brown and Richard Chicarone are the writers and they're both local. And with a Panto where we get to have a really fun time, the part of the Panto tradition is grabbing popular songs and changing the lyrics. So we get to have, we have No Doubt in there. We have a Frank Sinatra song. We have Chapel Roan,
mm-hmm.
Hot to Go, but we changed it to Panto Go. We have, it's kind of any fun musical genre we can think of. We will grab the song and take it. And Richard Chicarone and Stephanie Brown, who are the writers,
mm-hmm.
Stephanie is great at taking a song, changing the lyrics so that it's able to move the plot forward. So it isn't kind of a, you know, if you go to see a review, you get to hear a song that you love. In a Panto, you get to hear a song that you love and the lyrics are really clever.
Right.
And they relate to the plot. So right. We're really lucky to have them as writers.
And the choreography, I was delighted by it, by the whole thing. We were so pleased by it. And one of my favorite things, because I always enjoy it, when real people do slow motion, I just loved it. Every time it showed up, it just tickled me.
Oh, the slow motion.
Yeah, I love it when it's, you know, when it's actual people, you know, it's not like you're watching a film of it. It's like they're just doing slow. It always cracks
me
up.
I'm so glad that you enjoyed it so much. Stacey Prince, I'm sorry to mean to cut you off. I just wanted to make sure. I almost forgot to mention Bill Keck is the musical director,
mm-hmm.
and Stacey Prince is the choreographer. And Stacey, it's been just so much fun to work with both of them. I am not a dancer. I'm a director. So mm-hmm. for me, it does feel like I'm getting to work with people that have magical ability, that Stacey can grab a group of people and I'll say, is there any way we can make a slow motion battle between Lost Boys, chickens, and pirates? And she'll say, yeah, of course I can do that. And I'm like, are you sure? And then I go away for 10 minutes and she's done it. So she's really incredible. And Stacey Prince is a local theater maker and choreographer. She had a Stacey work. Stacey Prince, she just had a show that they did at the Presidio Theater where you saw our panto. And Bill Keck, who's the musical director,
mm-hmm.
Bill was the musical director for Beach Blanket Babylon for many, many years.
Explains
and there's a lot of panto element in Beach Blanket Babylon.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all kind of tied together in one big, we like to say, kind of San Francisco stew.
So what are some of the challenges of putting together and directing a panto that wouldn't necessarily be readily apparent to someone who doesn't direct?
I think aside from, you know, it's great to be able to have a cast that big. I have a friend that's directing on Broadway. And he will call up and explain to me how difficult it is to direct a cast of 14 people.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of humbly listen on the phone quietly and think to myself, my cast is 22. So it's getting everybody together. I got really lucky because this is such an incredible team and such a great group.
Mm-hmm.
I think the most challenging thing for us has been, how do we put on something that people are going to have a great time for an hour and 50 minutes when they don't know what panto is, without, you know, you don't want to lose a lot of time giving people directions or giving them a lot of rules. You,
mm-hmm.
you want it to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I think where we've been really lucky with our writers, Richard and Stephanie, they've been able, you know, this is the fourth year that we've done the panto. And I think that they have really gotten the formula right of, let's instruct the audience a little bit, but let's not make anybody feel like they're in school or
right.
overwhelm them, because in actual panto, there might be, I don't even know, 40 or 50 different call and responses. And with an American audience, we chose the ones that we thought were fun. And then, of course, we've got a ghost chase in the
mm-hmm,
show.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm always going to go with a ghost chase because I'm more of a Halloween person than a Christmas person.
Sure, don't
tell anybody, although I just told your listeners.
Same. So
those are really fun. And I guess what we do in our ghost chase, in England, you're never supposed to put an actual ghost in the audience. And we just did because we thought it was fun.
So we have to talk a moment about your Captain Hook, played by Rotimi Agbabiaka, who was just, because he manages to get the audience booing him and then applauding him vigorously at the, you know, when it comes for curtain calls. So talk about Captain Hook for a little bit.
Rotimi is a star. anyone who has seen Rotimi Agbabiaka's work, we'll just know that we are so lucky in the Bay Area to have a performer on that level of talent.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with Rotimi. I've known Rotimi for about 10 years. And when we did Sleeping Beauty, Rotimi played the witch,
ooh,
who the writers named Hernia. And Rotimi is just the best. I think every single Disney movie should be remade And the villain should be played by Rotimi. Rotimi is just the most delicious, fun villain. And in Sleeping Beauty, sang Doja Cat. We changed it to Boss Witch. Mm-hmm. And Rotimi sings a Guns N' Roses song as Captain Hook, which blows my mind. I didn't know Rotimi. I mean, Rotimi can do anything.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never seen, because in, you know, as we've been discussing for your listeners, in a panto, the audience is interacting. And on the yesterday's show, we had a lot of like 3 and 4 year olds there.
Oh.
And Rotimi has this amazing ability that they'll be booing Rotimi and going nuts and screaming. And then Rotimi will start to speak and people will quiet down because they don't want to miss one word that mm-hmm. Rotimi is saying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the way that Rotimi gets to play with the audience is just getting to, you know, hating and loving a villain that much at the same time is just, I mean, it doesn't get better than that.
And I also love that Tinkerbell is, shall we say, Tinkerbell's got an attitude.
Yes, she definitely has. When Chanel and I were talking about the part, it was both really, it was fun for us to kind of build a character that was going to have some rough edges.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because Tinkerbell is, she's a, the jealousy part is built in there.
Right.
And in the movie, Tinkerbell doesn't even get to speak. She doesn't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
So having someone of Chanel's talent and acting ability
yep.
really kind of bring, you know, I said, let go for, she wants Wendy to disappear. Mm-hmm. I mean, the stakes are really high with this character. So it's been, it's real. I really enjoy that element of the kind of, I mean, it feels weird saying love triangle because it's a family show, but it is a love triangle.
Mm-hmm.
It's, she's in love with Peter, who has a thing for Wendy, and Tinkerbell, you know, wants to get Wendy, quote unquote, taken care of. And Chanel's just so great. She's such a great person to build a part with, and she's so fun on stage. And her kind of torch song moment, which it is just, it's so fun to watch every night.
Yeah. And I can't say enough how much I love the costumes and the fact that there are chickens. The chickens, when they appear, it was just amusing. And, the kids really responded to those chickens.
The kids love the chickens.
Mm-hmm. But who doesn't love chickens?
I didn't realize it. So the chickens are always part. So every panto at the Presidio, we'll have chickens, and we'll have the character of Pecker, who's a rooster,
mm-hmm.
who is the kind of mascot of the panto and the Presidio. So all of them will always have chickens, and they will always have Pecker, who is a rooster. So we have to think of creative ways to work them into the panto, and that's just if that's the hardest thing to do, I'll take it. So they're really fun to have.
Yeah.
And just to mention, the Presidio Theater is a beautiful theater in the Presidio. It is not the Presidio Movie Theater on Chestnut.
Mm-hmm.
Just want to make sure anybody listening doesn't make that mistake. It's the Presidio Theater in the Presidio. It's really close to the Walt Disney Museum.
Mm-hmm.
It's not far from Tunnel Tops, if you've been up there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, well, you were there, Marilyn, on Friday, but people sometimes confuse it with the Presidio Movie Theater on Chestnut, and it's not. It's the Panto in the Presidio at the Presidio Theater right at 99 Moraga.
Okay. Yeah, that is an important distinction. And there's parking there and everything, which also distinguishes it from the other location, which never has parking, so.
Never has parking, yet. And don't let your Uber or your Lyft take you to the wrong theater, because
sometimes. And just one more accolade, which is I really loved the introduction of the dance that introduced the Lost Boys. That was just funny. The whole, I forget which boy band it is, if it's Backstreet Boys or, but I was really amused by it.
Yeah. That I've got to give credit to Stacey Prince, the choreographer, when we were trying to figure out, you know, what do you do with the Lost Boys?
Mm-hmm.
They're not they're part of Peter Pan, but we were trying to figure out, okay, well, we had all these really fun ideas for how how we wanted to do Hook and how we wanted to do Tinkerbell, and mm-hmm. we made Wendy kind of like a young Netflix executive as opposed to just a girl flying around mm-hmm. in her nightgown. Mm-hmm. So, but we didn't know what to do with the Lost Boys, and Stacey Prince, our choreographer, kind of threw it out there saying it'd be fun if it was a boy band.
Yeah.
And then the writers, Richard Chikrin and Stephanie Brown, kind of took that and really ran with it.
Yeah, loved it. I enjoyed the show from start to finish, so kudos to you guys.
Oh, thank you so much.
So if people want to get tickets and let us know how long is it playing, what times is it playing, and where can people get tickets?
So the show runs and we close on December 29th. We have a couple sold out shows. If you give me 1 second, let me just check to make sure. We have 14 more shows.
Okay.
And they are, the 18th into the 29th. I think right now, next weekend, Saturday, the 21st and the 22nd, and the 24th, those are sold out. But we have shows on the 18th, the 19th, the 20th, the 26th, the 27th, and the 28th. And you can call the Presidio Theater box office or get online at Presidio Theater and you can get tickets for Peter Pan, Panto, and the Presidio.
And then if people want to find out more about the upcoming season, how do they find out that?
If you, that's a great question. If you go to, the Presidio, this is just the start, the 2025 season of programming at the Presidio Theater starts with this, and it goes out throughout the whole year. If you go to the Presidio Theater mm-hmm. website, it will give you all the information about the programming that's coming up. And there's a lot of great stuff that's coming up. There are a lot of bands coming in, Bella Fleck, and there are a couple different productions. There's a membership program that they just launched where you can become a member of the Presidio Theater. You get big discounts for the upcoming shows. You get to meet the artists. You get a big discount on merch. And if you've been there, you've seen that we have great merchandise up at the Presidio Theater. So the membership services, which if you go to the website, you can check it out, and it's a great deal. I think it starts at $75.
Okay. Well, Liam Vincent, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today, and thank you for putting on a delightful production of Peter Pan at the Presidio.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. All right, people of Earth, this is your opportunity to go check out Peter Pan. It's a panto, and it's fun. Your kids will enjoy it. You'll enjoy it. I enjoyed it. And there's chickens. Everybody likes chickens.
Somebody heard, but
I love any song that mentions chickens. That's James Brown. Ain't Nobody Here But Us Chickens. That is from the Messin' with the Blue CD. It is 12:41. Who's about to touch your mind? DJ Dank is here to talk about a show coming up at Martoonies called Here's to Us. I'd like to welcome DJ Dank. How you doing?
Chicken. All about it. Fry it, bake it, whatever. It's all good.
So DJ Dank, tell us a little bit about you and about the show that's coming up.
Well, you know, it's Christmas time in San Francisco. One of the things I was always the most excited for when I first moved here was seeing Connie Champagne perform as Judy Garland on her Christmas concert. Little did I know, you know, 17 years later, I would be producing it. And, you know, I think at this point, she might be at year number 25 doing it. It's like a San Francisco tradition. It's one of those things. I don't know. For me, I grew up with Judy Garland movies, and my mother was all into that. So I always had a love for that, plus all the great classic Christmas carols and stuff. So it's just really great to be able to be part of that and to be able to create that. Because, again, it's like a San Francisco tradition. And, you know, you do all your different things. You go to the Union Square and see the Christmas tree. Mm-hmm. You know, you go to the Castro and go bar hopping, or go to the Sausage Factory or whatever you do. But you also, you go by Martoonies and you see Connie perform as Judy Garland. Because, again, nothing like it to hear Judy Garland singing those songs. You know, we've had a tough year this year, so all these songs are tonic to the soul, for me at least. It's like,
So how did you end up, like you said, you used to look forward to seeing her.
I did.
Producing. So how did you end up working together?
Well, you know, I've been friends with Connie forever, but it became the point when I started producing for Bambi Lake, and we started doing shows, and she was needing a producer and had come to a couple of my shows, and so she asked me if I would take over, and so I did. So I was super happy to. And I'm super, again, happy to have one of my best friends, Barry Lloyd, at the keys. He's such an amazing piano player and a performer on his own. But to have him teamed up with Connie just even creates more of a great duo to bring that kind of Christmas vibe to Martoonies. Well, plus the martinis don't hurt either.
So I did not grow up with Judy Garland. For those of us who are not Judy Garland literate,
right,
what can we expect?
Well, what you can expect are, well, a lot of your classic, you know, of course, Judy was super famous for singing Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas for the movie Meet Me in St. Louis. That's probably one of her most famous songs as well. But you'll also hear classic songs like Over the Rainbow, The Man That Got Away, The Trolley Song. I mean, all those classic Judy Garland songs. She's singing them in all of her musicals for MGM and beyond will be there. But there'll also be classic Christmas songs that you want to hear and holiday songs. And, you know, truthfully, it's just kind of what I call old school gay. It's the, you know, it's like, legend has it that, like, when Judy Garland died, that's kind of the thing that set off the riots in New York for Stonewall. Thank you for the Stonewall bar to begin the gay revolution of independence and freedom. So, she is one of our, I call her Saint Judy. And she is the saint of comebacks.
Oh, okay.
Is what she is. Because she was always very sickly, you know. She was a big star for MGM when she was young, and they put her through the hoops and put her on drugs to bring her up and bring her up and down and up. But she was a big giant. He was giant star when she was a kid with Mickey Rooney and all those movies and everything. But the problem was she had that kind of drug addict thought side of her, and she was never able to let go of all those drugs, and they, you know, killed her by the time before she was 50.
That's just
you know. But throughout her career, she would have these epic fails and then these big comebacks. And I think the gay community really identified with that need for her to come back and prove herself again. I think all of us have that need sometimes to do that and everything. It's a common trait and everything. But Judy really, really personifies that.
She also could, you know, I saw the movie, Star is Born,
which is a giant comeback for her.
Yeah. And like I said, I'm not, you know, really versed in Judy Garland.
Right.
But when I watched that movie, I was really impressed.
You kind of get it.
Yeah, it's like, oh, she played vulnerable, like vulnerable and raw, so beautifully.
That was her forte. But yeah, you know, in a lot of ways, I've always considered Judy kind of punk. In a way. No way. I mean, because it's in a way, I'm kind of like, well, you think you're a, you know, you can party and be tough and this, that, and the other. Boy, Judy Garland would put you under. But then there are stories of her. You know, she lived in Hollywood and she would entertain. And she was legendary for having the Bogarts over, Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall and Frank Sinatra and his wife. You know, and she was married to Vince Minnelli. And they were known for having fabulous parties full of laughter and fun and everything. So, you know, evidently she was. And then when you see her, on interviews, and when she was on The Tonight Show and other shows throughout her career, she's always just so funny at telling a story. She's just legendarily just being amazing to entertain her, a quick wit.
Yeah, I've seen her on like the Dick Cavett show.
Yeah, Dick Cavett show, all that stuff.
I was watching that one, and I was like, wow, she seems a little, you know, three sheets to the wind in that one. But
Judy was always three sheets to the wind. Okay. It's just she knew how to handle it. But that was the thing. I mean, it was she was a giant. Just the way she had to be managed was it was always just lots of, you know.
Okay. So in the show called Here It Is, or Here's to Us?
Here's to Us.
Here's to Us. Here's to Us. So you mentioned Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas.
Sure.
And The Man That Got Away. What other songs will we be able to hear and enjoy?
Well, you know, it's going to be a lot of your classic Christmas songs that you want to hear. I know that she always sings Republicans, which is her poke at the conservative folk. And that one always gets a big laugh. And then I believe this year we're going to top that off with Battle Hymn of the Republic on top of that to kind of give it a little more of a stab. Uh-huh. And then I believe we've dug up a couple of older Judy songs that she sang, including a song called Here's to Us that we're going to add in there as well. But, yeah, it'll be, again, it'll like be, you know, your 75, 80 minutes of just lovely, relaxing holiday songs, laughter, stuff like that. But, you know, just it will be a good time for everybody.
Excellent. Excellent. So when and where?
Ah, yes. Well, we are going to be going on our first night will be Thursday, December 19th at 7 p.m. And then the second show will be on Saturday, December 21st at 7 p.m. And you can get tickets at Eventbrite.
Very good. And we're so lucky because we actually have Ms. Champagne here in the studio.
Well, then here she comes. Yeah.
I know. This is fantastic.
There she is. Come on in, Connie. Good to see you.
Hi.
Come on in from the tornado outside.
It's wacky. So, Connie, let's talk a little bit about when did you get started singing?
Oh, my goodness. What a crazy question. I started singing in my bedroom with Marvin Gaye. I heard it through the grapevine. It was my own little thing. I went to the ye old record shoppy. It was actually called that in Roseville, California. And I thought I could sing that song, and I had a big old mirror in my bedroom, and I just sang it. But I was in love with the Beatles. But I could sing more like Marvin Gaye. But I never really connected with the whole. I mean, just like everybody else, I loved the Wizard of Oz and all that. But my grandparents worked for Chevrolet, and Chevrolet was sponsored by. They sponsored Bonanza, and Bonanza was on Sunday nights, opposite the Judy Garland show on CBS. So we never watched it. I'm giving away my age right now. So we never watched it. But my first memorable birthday was right after. John F. Kennedy was assassinated. And so when the Beatles came on the scene in fact, there's a movie or special now on Disney called Beatles.
Yeah, I saw that.
Oh, I got to come over and watch it.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. Well, that really lifted the depression from my home because my grandparents, they were hardcore Democrats. In fact, my grandma talks too much, just like I do. And they met at a wedding, John F. Kennedy and my grandparents. And he actually came over to their little dumpy house in San Jose and got drunk and played cards with them. So it was a big, they were devastated when he was assassinated. So when the Beatles came on the scene, it was like light. So I try in this particular show to incorporate that, because I feel like right now we're having that same malaise that's maybe not quite as devastating.
Yeah.
Because we're not as, back in 1964, we were not as cynical as we are now.
No, we didn't know as much either. But,
we
you know,
expect
it's,
things
it, it has
to
been
go
a tough. It's been a trying year on many levels.
Well, we expect things to go bad. In 1964, we didn't.
We were more idealistic.
Very
much more so. You can see it in the Christmas ornaments. You really can. So for me, David Hawkins and Dan and I decided to put together a show, a Christmas show, that would have all those Christmas black and white Judy Garland Christmas special show, but also have a place where people can go, all right, here's to us, my darling, my dear, here's to us tonight. You know, that's what we're going to be like. It's not what might happen next year, because tomorrow might not be so bright. That's how it is, right? We're all going to barrel down. We're going to get through it. And I hope everybody will come and do it with us, right?
I think so.
That's what we want.
Well, with that, so you're doing it at Martoonies.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing two shows or?
Yeah.
Two shows.
Okay. And it's the 19th, which is?
This Thursday.
This Thursday and the 21st.
Both at 7 p.m.
Both at 7 p.m. Okay. And if people wanted to get tickets in advance, how would they go about doing that?
Eventbrite.
Okay.
Then go to Eventbrite. There could be a few tickets available at the door. Bring cash or Venmo.
Okay. Okay.
Eventbrite.
And then Ms. Champagne, what are your plans for to celebrate the new year?
Oh my goodness. Hunker down. What are you going to do?
Same. What I usually do on New Year's is I watch Arsenic and Old Lace.
Oh, that's a good one.
Oh, with Cary Grant.
Yeah.
You know, I have to say, I was in that play in high school.
Who did you play?
Guess.
One of the aunts?
Yes.
Which aunt? Because I love
the littler one, the more calculated one. And in fact, some of our listeners might know Camera Obscura, also known as Kuhan Pak, the director of Virtue. She played the other sister, and we had a ball. We, you know, great minds, crazy minds. You know. Either wind up in San Francisco, I suppose, or they get lost completely. I don't know.
All right. So one more time for our listening audience, when and where for Here's to Us.
Yes. Connie Champagne as Judy Garland in Here's to Us this Thursday, December 19th, 7 p.m. at Martoonies. And there'll be another show the following Saturday, December 21st, 7 p.m. Events are available at Eventbrite. There could be a few seats available at the door. If so, there'll be cash or Venmo.
And let's not forget the incredible San Francisco treasure, Barry Lloyd.
I was talking about him earlier. He is amazing on the keys.
And I have to say, working with him, the stories he has to tell, working with the incredible Ruth Hastings, and
you know he spent a summer living with Tennessee Williams?
I did not know.
In Florida, in the Keys, when he was a kid, he was like 18 or 19. He spent a whole summer just living there because Tennessee was friends with his mother.
Well, you know, that's how Brando became, you know. He also spent a summer fixing his plumbing, so to speak.
Well,
but, no, I mean, that's an incredible story. Well, I'm going to see him in, like, 5 hours. So
ask him about it.
I'll ask after rehearsal, though. Because, you know, he tells such great stories. You have to, we all have to sort of redirect and get back to the point, you know.
Oh, there's two or three of those. But, yes, it's going to be a fantastic show. Two amazing talents. A San Francisco tradition. It's a great way to start the holiday off or continue it on. It's at 7 o'clock, so you can go to the show and then go out to dinner afterwards and go out partying or whatever you want to do.
Excellent. Well, Connie Champagne, DJ Dank, I want to thank you both for being on the show today.
Well, thanks for having us.
And I'm even though I'm not well-versed in Judy Garland, I'm going to try to make it to one of the shows.
Thank you, Marilyn.
We'd love to have
you.
You
know what's interesting about the title of the song?
Nope.
Here's to Us, just so folks know. David Hawkins, who wrote quite a bit of the banter, it's a play on U.S.
Oh.
Okay. And also, the night that she sang it on the show, it was her very, very last show. She knew she'd been canceled. That November, obviously, her buddy, JFK, had been assassinated. That night, she sang only Battle Hymn of the Republic and did a concert show. We thought about doing Battle of Hymn of the Republic, but you guys, we know you don't want to hear seven verses of Mine Eyes Have Seen the Glory, you know. Yeah. Not that it is not an incredible song, but it is Christmas after all.
It is Christmas. And with that in mind, I am going to play a track from your Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas CD. And I want to say to my listening audience, there's so much out there to enjoy and to go do. So if you're not out there having your mind touched, it's because you're making a choice. The pandemic, you know, you had to stay home and do nothing. Now you have choices.
But we're out there.
Yeah, it's over.
All right, people. So, people of Earth, until next week, ta-ta and toodly-doo.
Well done.
Happy holidays. Happy holidays. May the merry bells keep ringing. Happy holidays to you. Happy holidays. Happy holidays. May the calendar keep ringing. Happy holidays to you.